Blog Talk Radio.
CM Connect Radio.
And welcome to the Kid Ministry Collective Radio Show, brought to you by cmconnect.org. And we're really excited to be back on the air, and our goal here at the KMC is to encourage, equip, and even entertain the Kid Ministry community. My name's Tom Bump, and I'm the host of the show tonight, and I'm glad that I can be with you again. It's been a little while since we've had a program, but we're glad to be back and going full guns with the new program tonight. So we're looking forward to sharing tonight. Our topic in this show, in this episode, is all about volunteering and volunteers and taking care of volunteers and whatever else wisdom our guest has to bring forward to us. And our special guest is the one and only Michael Chanley. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Thanks. There's actually a couple other Michael Chanleys out there. I found out on Facebook. But I'm
well,
your
we're
one and
call
only,
you
one
the one
only
and
Tom.
That's right. You are our only one and only. So it's good to talk
good
to you,
to
my friend. We're glad to get you back on the show, and both of us are enjoying some nice comfortable weather, and it's you know, seems like the last time I had a show it was cold and nasty here in Cleveland, and now it's actually nice and warm. So we're excited. But, you know, like I said, tonight we're going to talk all things volunteers, and most of us in kid ministry world have a love-hate relationship with finding and keeping and equipping volunteers, especially this time of year with finding Bible school workers or summer teams. And it does seem to occupy a lot of time and energy. And it's one of those things that really requires constant maintenance. And so tonight, that's one of the things we'll talk about is how do we create a healthy volunteer culture to make it so that it's not as stressful to leaders, and how do we keep those volunteers around, and what are some of the best ways to equip and recruit those kind of things. So tonight, that's what we're going to be doing. Well, Michael, let's just dive right in. You have just started kind of a little new initiative on CM Connect, and I really enjoyed the first email that came out today on volunteers. Why is volunteering such a big issue in the world of kid ministry?
Yeah, well, I mean, for most children's pastors, it is the issue, right? I mean, it is the ubiquitous challenge of children's ministry. How do I get enough people to help me fill all these spots and to serve all the children? And it doesn't matter really who you talk to in children's ministry. At some point, if you're around children's ministry for any length of time, you're going to have a challenge of finding volunteers for some program or some portion of your ministry. For me, you know, that came whenever we were transferring at our church. We were changing from a program that was focused on large group to be in a program that was all about small group. And so a lot of what I'm sending out in these emails that I've been sending is based off of that experience, what things worked. And I haven't actually talked about that in the email series yet, but some of the truth that I gleaned from that is in there. Like, for example, some who signed up early in the email training would have gotten today the first step, which is about starting with vision. You have to start with vision. You have to start with knowing what you're calling people to. When you talk about volunteers, I'm sorry, I went way off your question, Tom. For children's pastors, it's such an essential thing because we have X number of kids, and odds are they all don't fit in one room. So you have to have someone to supervise them and to teach them. And that's just the starting point. What you want to end with is you want to end with a group of leaders who will be the hands and feet of Christ to those kids, and who will serve them and who will teach them about Jesus.
Yeah, awesome. So and you did talk about vision, and so let's link into that a little bit and think about what makes vision so important to the volunteer culture, you think?
Sure. Well, I think it's more than just the volunteer culture. I just think it is, I think it's humanity more than anything else. I don't think it's any one culture. I don't think it's, obviously Western civilization doesn't have any sort of monopoly on vision. Vision is how we're designed, and it's how God created us. We are called to vision. We rally around great vision. We're drawn to people with vision. And then it's very true in children's ministry. When you look at the children's ministry, and you look at the church as a whole, there's no other ministry in the church that requires as many volunteers and as much operational support as the children's ministry. Now, I think you could argue that some of the other ministries, youth ministry, depending on the size of youth ministry, can grow and be more operational and have more volunteers. But in my experience, the typical church, the children's ministry requires more volunteers than any other part of the church. And you have all these leaders, all these people who are leading children, they have to be rallied around a vision. There has to be some trumpet calling them to arms. There has to be something that is saying, hey, this is what a win looks like. This is what we need to do. This is what we need to accomplish. This is our goal. This is our purpose. And if that isn't there, then what you do is you have a group of people who just come and they babysit, they do whatever they can to keep the kids from biting each other, and then they call it a win when all the parents pick up the kids. And yes, that is a starting place, and that is where a lot of ministries are, and that's where I've been in my children's ministry before too. But I think that God's calling for us is much bigger than that, and it's much, much deeper than that. And I think when we get a glimpse of what God's vision for our lives is, and we can communicate that in a way that's infectious, then we build teams of volunteers that understand the vision and that want to be engaged in the vision and that ultimately fulfill the vision.
Yeah. I saw the truth of all that, of just what you said. I've had the honor of being a part of the Infuse program, Infuse 8, with Jim Weidman. And we were down on a retreat this week, past weekend, and we were visiting a church and had the opportunity to visit with some of the staff and volunteer people, I guess, that were there. And it was a very powerful object lesson that we talked with several different people there associated with the church, and they all shared the same language when it came to the vision and the goals of the children's ministry. It was almost spooky to hear them echoing. I mean, they weren't even in the same room. They didn't hear each other. But we asked the same question, and they answered it almost exactly the same way. So it was obvious that someone above them shared this vision, went after God, got this vision, and then began to pour it into their team, and their team had it. And I thought that was a really powerful object lesson that if somebody ever asked me what makes a strong volunteer team or why is vision so important, when you have that buy-in from your team, it deepens their level of commitment because that becomes personal to them. I mean, that's, like you said, that's a rallying cry. I thought that was a really powerful object lesson that wasn't even really a part of Infuse, but yet it was, that I thought was really kind of cool. And then when I read your email today, I thought, wow, that fits perfectly that that's really important.
Yeah. Well, Jim Weidman is a guy with lots of experience. And I know that, for those of you listening, that he's recruiting people now to be a part of his next Infuse group, and I would just encourage, having seen that program, which he's hosted it at CM Connect, and he runs it through CM Connect, just pours heaps of stuff into it. His groups are typically the most active. It's why Jim is always the leader in CM Connect month after month, because of his infused groups that he runs there. Anyways, he has so much experience and so much to say. He knows people. He knows volunteers. He knows how to build a children's ministry that works. And I would just encourage anyone who's thinking about it to be a part of that. It's really a great program. Jim's really good people.
Yeah. I can echo that for sure, being a part of it. And I'm just about halfway through the first the 6 month program, and it has changed. Let me put it this way. I wished I had done this 15 years ago. I honestly could see my ministry going in a whole different direction had I learned some of these skills, years ago. I really wished I had been a part of it, but what it has done for me now, it's changed even the way I'm leading right now, and I'm in a brand new church, and I'm really excited to see what God's going to do with the changes that I'm making personally. My family's seen the difference, I'll tell you that much. So anyway, Jim can pay us later. actually, his knowledge is so invaluable. It's amazing. It really has been great to lean into him. Yeah.
Sure.
And thank you, Michael, for allowing us to use CM Connect to do it, because it is a great meeting place for all these folks to gather, and the forums have been wonderful.
Jim could connect anywhere he wanted to. Jim's kind of guy. If he wanted to, he could build his own website. And it's a huge honor to me. I look at CM Connect as, I don't look at it as mine. I guess the IRS does, because I have to pay the taxes and everything for all the bills and stuff. But I look at it as belonging to the community. I mean, everything that's there is user generated, and it's everyone's interaction as part of the community. Giving to other children's pastors that has really made it something unique and different. And it's not, my vision continues to be to grow the site to a place that that we don't have to sell any advertising, that it's completely user supported, and we're not there yet, but we're getting closer, and so I'm working in that direction.
That's cool.
God's doing.
Yeah, well, I've definitely used it, and even to direct my volunteers to it, I want them to connect with people. I want them to engage others, and so I've been pushing my volunteer team over here, because I want them. Because again, I guess that kind of leads me into the next question is, from your understanding and stuff, how can a leader really begin to create a healthy volunteer culture? And I guess maybe you better define that and say, what does a healthy volunteer culture look like first, from what you've seen?
Yeah. I don't want to be cynical, Tom, but the church is in a healthy place. I mean, there's so many, everyone there is broken. And, even us who are pastors and are ordained in ministry, we're broken too. And so, what I like to think of is I like to think of more of a having a healthy tolerance for unhealthiness. And, there are some things that you can tolerate that are unhealthy, like, for example, the little kid who picks his nose, a volunteer who's rough around the edges and who's maybe like me when I first came to the church and cusses. Doesn't realize you just don't say some things in the church. I got in trouble one time because I said shut up in church, and that's like a cuss word to some families in our community. I'm like, are you serious? Like, yeah, we don't say that. And I got in trouble one time because I talked about High School Musical at church, and one of the families was very upset because, like, we don't let our kids watch that garbage in our home. We can't believe you bring it up at church. And I'm like, what? Have you seen it? I know, like, it's Disney, and I know that there's people dancing, but, like, it's about friendship. Anyway, so someone may agree with them. I don't know. But anyway, so, like, I would just say that when you talk about a healthy volunteer environment, a healthy culture, and you have to have a tolerance for dealing with unhealthy people, and not not in a physical sense, but in a spiritual sense, because we're all sinners and we're all messed up inside, and we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
And the more grace you can learn to extend, the more I think it allows people to really experience the grace of Christ, to really understand and to see authenticity lived out. Some people can't handle that type of grace, and it baffles them so much that they respond to it in a negative way. That's okay. You know, our calling is to love people and to serve them as we love Jesus. And so anyways, I don't know if that answered your question or not. It's like I'm
I think that's good, because I think that's a great point. Is that, you know, obviously Jesus came to be a doctor to the sick, not the healthy. And a lot of times in the volunteer culture, yeah, it is realizing where we each other are, where we are together on our journeys, and loving each other and being the body together. You know, I think that's a great description of a healthy, I mean, if we want to call it a healthy culture, is learning to love people where they're at, and to allow God to work in them, and instead of trying to make them in our image, let them be in God's image, and use that, leverage it, use their talents and abilities where they are. I think that's great. You know, I think as we look at that, I know in my former churches, well, in all my churches, I've recruited some people that maybe others would look at a little cross-eyed, you know, and go, why is that person here? But I think what I was looking for was their heart. I was looking for their passion for Jesus. And I figured, you know, again, that's where God can equip the rest. God can take care of the rest. My job was to, you know, to find, you know, look at their gifting and all that kind of stuff too, and their talents and abilities and all that. I think that's a given,
So, when you talk about what does a healthy volunteer culture look like, then, you know, it's more than just what you see on the outside. It's more than just, you know, the nicey-nicey church things. It is, like, in my mind, just because I know, and I'm a mess, I don't forget the grace that God has extended to me. I'm reminded continually of the sin in my life, and I'm reminded continually of what I was saved from because of things that's happened in my family and in our history and such. And so I don't forget that when I'm dealing with people, and I try and emulate Jesus. I try and walk like Paul walked and follow Jesus and follow Paul as he's following Jesus, like he says to do. And that, I think that leads to a healthy volunteer culture that is filled with grace and is filled with forgiveness. It's filled with compassion. It's filled with empathy. It's filled with patience and love and kindness and all those things that we're taught to live out in the Bible that really are the culture of the church. So, you know, if you think about what should your volunteer culture be like, it should be the culture of the church. It should be doing the very basic things that we're called to do in the Bible, but doing it in a way that we're eventually discipling others. And that's the children we serve.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, I think a lot of leading volunteers also requires that we have a positive attitude about what our volunteers and who they are, and instead of focusing on what they can or can't do. And so how can a leader develop a place? Because, I mean, we've kind of been talking about, but what is, you got any specific things that you would look at and say, hey, you know, this is how you can really truly make this a place where, you know, people can serve? How can a leader make that happen, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a principle that works, whether or not we like it, and that is that we attract people who are like us. And, yeah, I mean, that's
scary.
it's very scary, but it's very true. You know, you look at church growth, and this has been a study that I've seen in several different ways. But basically, a senior pastor will attract a congregation that is plus or minus 10 or 15 years his age. And it's because people are drawn to people who are like them. And so if that senior pastor is an excellent communicator, then they will appeal to a broader range. If they're a typical communicator, good, and maybe even on the upside of that, then they're gonna attract people who are 10 to 15 years above plus or minus their age. And that's true of us too, as leaders in our children's ministry. When we're recruiting volunteers, the people that we're going to have the easiest conversation with are our generation, our cohort of people who are like us. We have shared experience. And so how do we break out of that? What do we do to change that and to transform that? We have to be intentional about recruiting people to be key leaders in our ministry who are parts of other demographics. So for example, I'm 38-year-old white guy. I might try to recruit someone in my community who can appeal to, I might try and recruit a lady who's a little bit older than me. In chat yesterday, today's Thursday, 2 days ago, Linda Ransom Jacob was talking about recruiting boomers and how important it is to recruit baby boomers into your ministry and how you can do that. But she's of that generation. So if I had her at my church, I would, well, first of all, I would probably defer a whole lot of things to her because she's so on it. But she's got so much wisdom. But I would totally have her recruiting that generation because she can speak with passion about what it's like to be a grandma. And more than that, more than just speaking with passion, she has lived out, like, I don't know if you know her story or not, but she has lived out the example of being a godly influence in her grandchildren. Her daughter and son-in-law, I think that's right, her daughter and son-in-law are both in the military and were recently deployed overseas, and she stepped in and took care of the kids. And she's a tremendous lady. She's really – so anyways, we came up in chat with a term called boomer recruiting. So boomer recruiting put together. But anyways, my point is that you should find someone who is outside of that demographic to help grow your volunteers, and find someone who has the ability to win others over to them, who's charismatic a bit, maybe a people person, mm-hmm. and put them in charge of that.
I love that thought, and I wrote that down. You know, start looking for others outside our own demographic. And because that's powerful. I think sometimes we overlook that, or we've been, I've been guilty of this, that I've gone after a couple of those type of folks, and I've gotten rebuffed with the attitude of, well, I've already served my time. I've already given, mm-hmm. I've already done that. But I think, maybe that's one way we overcome that is by getting somebody of that generation to do, instead of me doing the recruiting, get somebody of their generation who really can speak and can show them that their job is never truly done in the body of Christ, there is no word retirement in the Bible. I always challenge older folks, look, if Caleb can go to Joshua and say, I want that mountain at his age, and he went and charged up and, kicked some butt before he got his mountain, then why isn't our older generation jumping in there and saying, we want this generation. We need to take this back. Anyway, sorry, that's my little soapbox version.
It's good. Things like gender and race, that very much depends on where you live and different regions of the world, and even within our own country, especially within our own country, react to those types of things differently. And different ages of people react to those types of things differently, too. I had a friend who was at a Korean church in Chicago, and she knew the culture enough to know that she would, as a young lady, she would never be able to get men in her ministry unless she got some of the other men who were influential leaders in the church to lead. So she knew her demographic, she knew what her strengths were, but she also knew the culture enough to know that she had to find one of the men who were seen as leaders and recruit them to serve in her ministry, and then she used that person, not used, but she engaged that person to get them to recruit other men, and she was able to grow the number of men serving in her ministry dramatically. And it was because she understood the culture, and she understood her own limitations in being able to connect with people and challenge people to aspire them to do something greater. A lot of Asian cultures look to a male leader, and that's very true in the Middle East. In the Middle East, it's even more so.
Yeah. That's a good segue into the next question that I wanted to ask you tonight was, you know, as you've traveled around, what do you see kind of trending in this area of the Kidman world when it comes to volunteering and recruiting and that kind of thing? Who's doing it well, and what are they doing?
Yeah, I could go on some rants here. here's the thing, Tom. There's a lot of people who will tell you, hey, do this, do that, and this is how you do children's ministry, and follow me, I'm a leader, and all this stuff. And I would just tell everyone listening and anyone I meet to that if someone is putting themselves out there as a leader and this and that, like you need to test the fruit of what they're saying before you start to follow their advice. You need to look and you need to see what their experience in ministry has been, what the results of the ministry was, what was the situation that they were serving in, were they in a situation where, you know, that is similar to yours even, you know, serving at a church, you know, on one side of the country that's completely different from yours doesn't necessarily add up that the results they had from the things that they did are going to work in your community. So be mindful of those things, and be mindful of, you know, of people who really, you know, a lot of people really, they like to get their ego stoked by being this phrase thought leader gets used a lot. And I don't want anybody to lead my thoughts. I want Jesus to lead my thoughts. So anyways, I would say, you know, when you're looking at volunteers and how to volunteer, start with trying to understand what God's calling is for you, understand your culture, understand where you're at, develop a vision for that ministry. That vision should be, as much as possible, tied to the vision of your local church leadership. So if your church's leadership is, like, for example, our church's leadership, the mission of our church is to connect people to Jesus with one another. So our children's ministry team, which I used to be part of on staff, and now I serve on the team I used to help lead, our mission statement is connecting kids to Jesus and one another. We just emulate our leadership. And so I would encourage anyone in children's ministry to do the same. Look to your local leader who knows your culture and who's prayed about how to lead that church, what to do with the ministry in that community, and they are the people that God has ordained to be the leaders in that ministry, in that community. And those are the ones who I would look to first. Now, when it gets down to how do you communicate that and things like that, then you know, there's a lot more generalizations you can make, and you can talk to, you know, when I'm trying to figure out communication, I a lot of times I don't necessarily even look at people who are just inside the church. I try and look at people who are outside of the church who are excellent communicators and who have been successful and as leaders, and try and figure out what it is they did and discern how I can emulate that, you know. But I'm inspired by people like General Patton. You know, I mean, I'm inspired by people who
I have no idea why.
Who were leaders? Well, I mean, leaders on a different level. You know.
Yeah.
Totally different. You know, the church. I think the church should operate more like a military, a branch of the military, than like a corporation. You know.
I don't like that.
I mean, not yelling at each other, and people have this misperception that it's all violence and yelling,
yes.
But there are these incredibly strong values that the military holds.
Well, there's order. Yeah,
there's order,
there's value.
There's loyalty, there's honor, there's, you know, the Marine Corps, the three core concepts of the Marine Corps, honor, courage, and commitment, and... And if the
boy,
if the Marine,
those would be
the,
great for the church.
Yeah, if the church would just say, you know what, honor, courage, commitment—that's what we're going to live by. That's who we're going to be. Man, the church would look a lot different.
Well,
that sounds very critical. I don't mean it to be.
No. But I get what you're saying, because it really seriously would affect the volunteer culture. If I mean, that would make it so much harder to leave a body. It would be harder to hold a grudge in the body. It would be harder to just say, well, I don't want to do that because I don't want to do that, rather than, hey, my leader asked me to do that, and I want to serve, you know, or I'm afraid to use my gifts that way. I mean, having courage, you know, God says, you know, I'm going to empower you. I've not given you a spirit of fear. And so, man, those are right on. I mean, and it's not being, you know, because like I said, I'm not trying to be critical of the church either. But nowadays in our culture, it's too easy to leave. It's too easy to walk away or call in because, oh, it's a nice sunny day and I'd rather get some yard work done. You know, or... You know, hey, our kids' sporting events take precedent over being with the body. You know, and so I think that's a good challenge, Michael. That you just put out there to the body that we as leaders need to keep talking about in our churches. I like that.
I mean, as part of who I am, I can tell you that if a church or an organization doesn't have honor in its DNA and isn't committed to having hard conversations and working through difficult circumstances in a way that is pure and is above reproach, then I've gotten to a point in my life that I don't want to be a part of that. I love them and I'll serve people who are in that situation, but there's a lot of people who have a lot of junk in their life that they have to work through, if you can't sit down with someone who believes the same core things as you and have a hard conversation, disagree with one another, and then walk away and still love each other, then I think you're reading your Bible wrong. That's me. I'm not a theologian, Tom. So I'm pretty simple guy. I read my Bible and I try to live it out.
I hear you, man. I hear you. I think
I don't know.
I think we're at that generation where I had just had this discussion at Infuse that, you know, we've got to get back to loving God and loving people. And doing it better than the world does, and showing the world that we have something different to offer. And my biggest concern, and I guess I am old school, but even, you know, with my volunteers, I want to challenge them to live such different lives so that they have something to offer the children that the children can't get anywhere else. I think the church needs to get back to, we've become so much like the world. I mean, the statistics are too identical, and it didn't used to be that way, little by little we've given in, or we've given over, or we've given up, and you know, man, I guess that honor, courage, and commitment needs to be a rally cry again to say, look, Are we going to honor God? Are we going to have courage to stand against the culture? And are we going to be committed to take up the cross and go? Because I think that's huge. And it's hard to find volunteers that want to give it. You know, they want to be all in, you know, because they've got so many other things to do.
Right. And so obviously, we're all defective, and we all mess it up. And so our culture has to allow for a tolerance of that.
Mm-hmm.
But our culture also has to create an environment that says when someone is stepped outside of those boundaries, we can't just turn a blind eye to the fact that, hey, you made a commitment to be here, and because you didn't show up, I still love you, but I can't ignore it. I mean, it's not, you're not being a bad person by having a hard conversation. You're having a hard
right.
conversation that person forced upon you. I mean, that person didn't give you any options. You're the leader, and they didn't show up. So you're not a bad person because you're saying, hey, look, I don't know what you're thinking, but you said you'd be here
mm-hmm.
every other Sunday for the next 6 months or however long your commitment is, and
yeah.
you didn't show up 2 Sundays ago, and you showed up 30 minutes late this Sunday. Like, I'm not the bad guy. How am I the bad guy in this? Like, you have to have a conversation with volunteers. Most people will beat themselves up worse than you will beat them up anyways. And they will, as
yeah.
soon as you say something about it, like, look, I know, I'm so sorry. And that's where the grace comes in, is you don't have to beat people up. You let them beat themselves up. and you just say, look, it's okay. Look, I love you. I just want you to understand what we miss when you're not here. We need you. You're
yeah.
a part of our team. And
yeah.
and so then your communication changes. It.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are people, Tom, I mean, and, you know, you've been around enough to know this, and most people have, just by nature of knowing people, there are people who they just won't get it. Like, they don't understand until you have a hard conversation with them, and you have to have those hard conversations. But so what
yeah.
comes out of that, to go back to with your question about the culture, what comes out of that is a culture of commitment, a culture of respect, a culture of being in it together, a culture of, you know, standing up for one another, and a culture of commitment. And ultimately, all of those things combined really are, I think, honorable.
Yeah, man, I've got to agree with all of that. Amen. It's not easy, but, you know, it's one of those things that if we don't come to them with a grace-filled, love-filled, hard talk, I honestly don't. I mean, and Jim said it too to us. The reason why he's hard on us is because he loves us, and he's
yeah.
going to speak the truth because he knows what's at stake.
Yeah.
He sees a big picture. He's got it. He's again. It goes back to that vision that you have. And because you have that vision and that passion that's given from God, you're going to go to your volunteer and say, hey, look, I love you too much to leave you this way and to let
yeah.
this continue. And I want to encourage you. I want to build you up because we need you. The body of Christ, isn't the same without you. I think when you do that in such a loving way, it raises the bar with them. It shows them that they need to value those things because that's what God values. You know, God's
yeah.
a God of order. Why shouldn't, you know, even as messed up as we are, we still need to follow that way too, you know. So that's a great, great, great reminder.
I think a good gut check question for the church, especially
mm-hmm.
for children's pastors, people who are leading the children's ministry, who have volunteers working under them, is really to ask yourself the question, what is the difference between someone serving in my ministry from someone who's serving at the YMCA down the road, or someone who's volunteering at Moose Lodge, or someone who's volunteering at the whatever? What's the difference? Like, how would the YMCA react if I volunteered to be a soccer coach and I didn't show up? How would the YMCA react if I said, hey, I'm going to bring refreshments for the kids, and you didn't show up. How would, what kind of pressure would the other families in that community put on you? What kind of questions would that YMCA director put on you? And maybe they wouldn't. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. But in my mind, it feels like the world, and YMCA is, I think, in its DNA, originally a Christian organization. You know, but you could substitute any number of organizations. You could substitute the public school and say, hey, if you volunteered to serve at the public school and you didn't show up, how would they treat you? Would they treat you the same as the church, or would they treat you different? And there's a whole, like, there's a whole list of things that come out of that. I mean, there's just so much. Like, would they treat you with grace? Would they love you? Would they encourage you? Would they spur you on to a good work? Would they have a hard conversation with you? Would they shun you? And depending on the type of person you are, and I think depending on where we're at in our faith walk, we would answer those things in different ways. What I would challenge people to do is that your volunteers and your ministry would know that you love them so much that if they mess it up, they're gonna get a kick in the pants, but it's gonna come with love. And so there's going to be room for grace, and there's going to be room for making a mistake, but there's also going to need accountability, and they're also going to need to understand, hey, look, when I don't show up, they need to feel it. They need to know you're costing other people, like you're hurting other people. You're stopping the gospel from being spread this weekend when they talk to the kids. You know, you're creating problems. And so, yeah, anyways.
Yeah. That's some good stuff. I think that's a great gut check question. I applied that even recently to a number of volunteers that for some reason, some churches, their cultures are to arrive late all the time to services. And so, you know, to shift that volunteer culture and to say, look, you know, what I typically say with my team is, you know, on time is late. You know, you got to be here early. That's on time. It's not showing up, you know, on, you know, 9 o'clock. If church starts at 9 and you show up at 9, you're late. You're not on time. I don't care if the culture of the church is that everybody can wander in at 5 after or 10 after. I've often joked about, I'm going to start locking the doors at 9:05, you know, and freak people out, and say, sorry, go home, you're too late. God didn't, you know, God's already started the service, you know, or whatever. I'd like to come up with a snappy thing for the doors and lock them up one weekend just to see what people would do. Of course, I'd probably be looking for a new job.
It wouldn't go as well as you think it might.
But, you know, it's just kind of funny because, you know, we have this mentality that, yeah, it's okay for the church, but we would never do it anywhere else in our life. You know, we wouldn't show up at our sports teams late. We wouldn't show up at our job late. We wouldn't show up at our kid's baseball game late, you know, because the kid would scream bloody murder. Why do we accept that? And part of it is because I think we're afraid, like you said earlier, to have that chat, to talk to people and challenge them to something greater. I honestly think that's something that if we're going to create good volunteer cultures in our bodies, in our children's ministry, those are one of those things that we need to push up and lean into and make sure we start on time and we get stuff going, and they realize, ooh, we're late. We're going to start a little later because everybody else is starting later. I think that sells us out. Anyway, I got us off topic, but it's one of those things that I've been sensitive to recently as I've helped with some other churches too. That's one of the things that I've seen them struggling with in their church is that kind of thing. So, we don't have a ton of time left, and one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, when it comes to volunteer retention, what are some things that we can do in this day and age that you've seen in your experience that we can do a better job of retaining volunteers?
Yeah, definitely. So so those of you who are getting the volunteer training that I'm sending out in the emails, that's actually one of the things that will be coming as part of that. I'll talk quite a bit about how to retain volunteers because it's a huge passion of mine. If you're listening to this and you haven't signed up for that yet, you can sign up for it. It's free training that I send out. You get like a daily email. I try and limit to just one a day. So when you sign up, you won't get an email until the next day, and then the training starts the day after that. But there's a link on the sidebar, the right sidebar of any page of CM Connect, and it just says need more volunteers. And you just put in your email or put in your friend's email, and they'll start getting the training from us. But what we're going to talk about in the volunteer retention thing, I had this incredible experience when I was on staff at Southeast where we went from a program, I mentioned it earlier in the program, or in the radio program tonight, we went from a situation where we had a large group-driven children's ministry, and we wanted to make it into a small group focus where we were interacting with more of the kids. And we did that because the vision and the mission of the church had changed to be connecting people to Jesus and one another. And so we wanted to connect kids to Jesus and one another, but we realized that they were never really connecting to one another. I mean, we were arguably connecting them to Jesus through the worship and through the large group stuff, but we wanted to connect them to one another. We wanted to help build a community, the same vision that our senior pastor was casting to the whole church. We wanted to emulate that in our children's ministry. So we had decided to adopt a small groups model, and again, Tom, this has been several years ago, so so we've kind of walked this path a bit now. We decided we wanted to emulate what the leadership was doing and put in a small groups model, and as we did that, there was a lot of debate on our staff team about whether or not we would be able to retain our volunteers. In the conversation, to boil it down, was basically, me, and I'm high vision, me and my boss, whose name was Steve, he's still there, and he was in support of moving towards small groups, and a couple of other people, and then there was another, and what we believed with the right vision, people would rally, and people would be a part of this bigger vision, and they would want to be a part of the small group, and if they left, then we were better off if they left. So that was one side of it, and the other side of the extreme was, You guys don't realize, and this is how they put it, you guys don't realize if we ask people to do more than they're doing already, our people will leave. Our people will not serve more. They will not do more. We're going to be asking too much of them, and they'll walk away, and they won't come back. They won't volunteer. So the idea of volunteer retention was the core thing that created fear and created tension in this change. Mm-hmm. So we worked through it. We worked through all the deals. We listened to the criticism of the people who were worried about it. But like I said, my boss was on board with it, so we were going to move in that direction. It was the vision of the church, so it was already there. So we had to figure out how do we overcome this obstacle. So instead of just bulldozing everyone, we just had really intentional conversations that were very, very difficult to figure out how do we create something that answers their concerns and takes care of the very real problem that they're voicing. And very long story. I don't want to get off into the bushes too much here. But what ended up happening was because they were willing and were comfortable to voice their concern, and there was a culture of acceptance of saying, hey, I don't think this is going to work. This is dangerous. We were able to work the program and cast the vision and be super intentional. And as a team, we ended up with a 90 or 95% retention rate at the end of the changes we made. And the reason was because the volunteers were saying back to us the vision, and they were saying to us, hey, we don't want to just stand there and check the kids in and make sure they don't bite each other. We want to be disciplers. We want to communicate the gospel to the kids. We want to teach. We want to do more. And so they really appreciated and valued the opportunity to do that. So I say all that, which is a lot, I know, to say this. When you are working on retaining volunteers and you're thinking through what does that look like, don't be afraid to challenge people. You've got to challenge people to lead. You've got to challenge people to stand up, and you've got to challenge them to do something greater than they're already doing. I mean, anybody can go in, and if you've ever had a job where you where you punch a clock and then you just go and you just move a widget, yes, that is work, and yes, it is draining, and yes, it is hard, and thank God for all the people who can do that. My parents did that, and I was raised on that kind of money. Blue-collar work, just, you know, my parents all worked in a factory. My mom worked in a cigarette factory. But at the end of the day, she was exhausted as much because of what she was doing didn't inspire her to something greater. We don't want our volunteers to be doing that. We want our volunteers to come in and not think of it as punching a clock and just getting in here and getting out, and not think of it as just pushing kids through a machine like they're another brick in the wall. That they need to think of them as people and as relational, and as this is a place that is, like, our vision is to change this generation of kids. This generation of kids will know the name of Jesus Christ, or I won't sleep at night. Like, I'm not going to be okay with the fact that some kid down the road from my street doesn't know and experience the love of Jesus. When some kid comes to my church, they are going to see someone who is smiling and who loves them and who is different than what they experience when they go to school or when they go to the soccer field, not because I'm different, but because Jesus made me different. And that's like everything. That's what matters. That's what retains.
Right on. Amen. Amen. I that was a very powerful statement there. I hope people caught that and we'll grab onto that, because that's so true. What are some of the ways that you found to help? You know, obviously we've hit hard tonight, and I think it's really important that we did do that on the whole idea that how important vision is and how important it is to impart that. What are some of the best ways that you know of, or at least that you've experienced of equipping those volunteers to serve and to get that vision? Any insights?
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that I think there is a bit of a lacking in the church. I know, I think it's Group Publishing or Standard Publishing. One of them has some tools to help you encourage volunteers, things that you can send out to people, like newsletters and things like that. And I don't know what it costs, but I'm sure they have it in their stores if you wanted to look it up or search it. And some of the other publishing companies have resources like that to help encourage people, or have little things you can buy and give to people. I really think the most powerful thing when it comes to communicating to volunteers and training volunteers, and the most powerful thing you can point them to is God's Word, and continuing to do that, continuing to be the pastor, even if your job title is ministry director or ministry assistant or whatever. You know, you're a missionary. You're a children's director, or whatever your church calls you. You are a preacher to those kids, and you're John the Baptist when you're teaching about John the Baptist. You're Paul when you're teaching about Paul. You are an example. You're a discipler. You are making disciples. You're showing them how to follow Christ, and you are an example of that. So be an example. Be a shepherd. I don't know. Did that answer your question, Tom?
Yeah.
Or am I way?
I think it gets into the heart of the matter. I think the only thing I would probably throw in from my side is I've been learning, is I think one of the other things that we can do a better job of is spending time with our volunteers outside of doing ministry and pouring into their life that way, showing them how much we care about them, not just for what they do for us or with us, but just caring for them. And as we do that, I think that's another area that we can do to equip our volunteers, because we're doing life with them, and we're challenging them. I think that's we pour our vision in sometimes in different ways, and we've got to get creative about it. And there are lots of resources out there. I think it's getting even better. And I'd love for you to even tell us about some of the resources, if you know of any others. But I know that they're starting to get more, because it's getting harder to get people there to meetings and to training sessions and stuff,
yeah.
You know, we're starting to do more online. What have you seen out there that we can leverage?
Well, so, you know, specifically to equipping volunteers, most things that I've seen equip volunteers to use a specific resource. And that's necessary when your church is for a period of time married to a specific curriculum or a specific program that comes from one of the publishing companies. And so I would encourage you that if you're using a specific resource versus writing your own stuff or developing your own things, I would encourage you that as your budget allows to use those resources and leverage those things. I know that True and 252 Basics and a number of the other curriculums that are out there have resources like that. You know, I think 252, which is Orange's curriculum, I know they've got tons of take-home stuff and things designed specifically for families to engage with kids. excuse me. Sorry, Tom.
That's okay.
I'm choking up. I'm getting choked up talking about resources
yeah.
and equipping people.
It's a moving experience.
I don't
experience,
know what happened. My voice
it?
Just cracked. Oh, my goodness. So, no, I would just say, you know, leverage those resources as much as you can. And if you can't find them, you know, just equip people with God's word. Send them a message, you know, and, you know, text them a verse and say, hey, I just want you to know this is the verse we're going to be talking about this weekend, and I want you to meditate on it and pray about it. And, you know, use God's word to equip them first. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It doesn't have to be anything spectacular. Just help them, be a pastor in their life and point them back to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be about, it doesn't have to be tied to the lesson. It just needs to be tied to Jesus.
Yeah. Well, we've got one, we've just got a couple minutes left, but we had one question that came in from Kathy Phillips on our Facebook group, and I want to make sure we get to this, because I asked the question about, you know, what kind of questions do you have about volunteering. And so her question was that one of these things that we've been dealing with is how to engage more parents. They often say, I'm not called to serve in children's ministry, or I'm busy with my own children. And so when we ask them to come into the classroom and help with games or crafts or even snacks, but we've been in their shoes, and we want them to serve well, but we also want them to partner with us even in the little things. So what insights can you help Kathy out with when it comes to getting volunteers from the parenting base?
Yeah. Look, I wasn't called to children's ministry. I was called to a whole lot of things, but when I got saved, I was called to serve the church, and children's ministry ended up being where God put me. It stuck, and I think that's because I was willing to serve, and I was willing to live out the gospel and to die to myself. So when you have someone who says something like, "Hey, I don't feel called to that ministry," that may very well be true. They may be mature enough. They may know that I'm not the right person to be around kids. But it may also be that they're just not mature enough in their faith to be able to step in and serve where God needs them to serve, and to allow God to work in them and through them in that. I've been in situations like that. There's been times when I've been asked to do things in the church where I'm just like, I don't think I can do that, guys. And there's been other times I've been forced to do it. It went fine, and then I realized, oh, well, God had it, and I didn't need to worry about it. But I would encourage Kathy and anyone else dealing with that, just bathe it in prayer. Give people an opportunity to start small, you know, talking to that person, and if that's their initial wall, is, hey, I don't feel called to children's ministry, you know, have a backup plan. So if you're talking to someone about trying to recruit them to serve in your ministry, and you're trying to go, you know, hey, I need you to be there every Sunday, and I want you to lead this group of kids and disciple them, and you're going to go deep with them every weekend, and you're going to have to prepare this lesson. You know, there are some people who can run an hour-long class and teach Sunday school every weekend with kids, and God has a special place in heaven for them. there are other people who they just can't, they could never do that. I could never do that. I could never focus on one weekend class and preparing a lesson to do one thing every single weekend. It would fail. Ultimately, it would fail. I could do it for a short amount of time, but I couldn't do it for a long amount of time. So I have a backup plan. Don't hit them with the big ask, which is the huge hole in your ministry. Hit them with one of the smaller asks. You know, say, hey, okay, I understand. Maybe you don't feel comfortable serving with the kids and doing a small group or doing this Bible study, which I really need. What if you just come and you're an assistant? Or what if you could you take this stack of crafts and prepare it over the course of the week to help me out so that this other person can do this? Or could you stand at the door and check kids in? Find a smaller ask and just be creative. You know, take time to get to know people. Take time to get to know what their strengths are and their weaknesses. And when you know what their strengths are, then you can more than likely find a ministry or a place in your ministry where they can serve and where it's less of a challenging ask.
So you're basically creating little on-ramps to bring them in. I like that. That's a great piece of advice. Those non-threatening ways for them. You know, maybe help a prep team. They can gather, you know, the things that the groups need for the weekend. And I think that's that brings to mind, you know, I got a volunteer because I asked a dad who, he was a big old biker guy and you know, he kind of, I think at first viewed children's ministry as women's work. So I approached him as, hey, I need a security team. I need somebody who can kind of walk my parking lot and walk my halls. And so he started doing that. Well, as he did it, he kept stopping and listening to the other leaders. And pretty soon he was like, hey, you know, my son's going to be up in this grade here pretty soon. And I'm wondering, you know, could I do something like that? You know, and it was all because I asked him to be a security person, not a small group leader. And he became a small group leader. Because I had an on-ramp for him. That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
And it's you know, the trick is being intentional about having that planned into your ask, if you will. Whenever you're asking for volunteers, you know, be flexible and know the positions you have. Now, at some point, if you're in a community that's relatively stable and you stay there long enough and you build into a community long enough, you should be able to get to a point where your ministry is actually able to turn people away and you say, hey, look, your gifts are perfect for this role, but that role is completely filled up and I don't have anything open for you. Now, if you ever find yourself in that spot, just walk towards the light because it's Jesus. sorry, that's not funny. I should do that. But in my mind, I had a funny visual there. So, if you ever find yourself in that...
That's okay, I got it.
If you ever find yourself in that, then what you need to do is you need to then go back and say, okay, let me put you on pause. Don't turn them away. Just let me say, hey, I'll find a place to use you. Right now, this position you want to serve in is all full. But then go and talk to some of those people that have been there for a while and ask them, hey, how content are you now that you've been in this, as you called it, on-ramp role? How would you like to step up into where you're leading a few of these people who are doing this? And then you're basically moving people deeper into serving your ministry and hopefully as a result of that deeper into experiencing what it means to serve in the church and to know Jesus.
Yeah, awesome. Well, hey, Michael, thank you. Thanks for your time tonight and for sharing. Give everybody, you know, some of those that are listening live and those that will be listening to this down the road, how can they get in on this new email and give a little more description, I guess, of what you're going, where you're going with it. Because I jumped on it
definitely.
As soon as I got your email.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I'll send out another email reminding people and giving people an opportunity to jump into it. Basically what it is it's, you know, my passion is to serve church. It's just who I am. And I love people, and I love children's ministry. I've been blessed to be steward of this community for a season. And so what I've realized in talking to different children's ministries from around the world is that there's a lot of resources out there, but it's hard to get to an event or to get to a even to get to a website sometimes to download a video or to buy a video. And there's a lot of training out there you can buy and stuff, but what I wanted to do is just take the gifts and the talents and experience God's given me over the last couple of decades of working with kids and in children's ministry and leading people. And just give that away to our community as a way of serving the community. So all you have to do is subscribe to this email list, and I'll start sending you training. And it's based on my experience and what I've learned from other people and what I've seen work in other cultures. And you know, there's no me beating down your door and stuff like that. It's just it's meant to be a tool for the church to use to serve. I've been asked, as a result of this new nonprofit that I'm launching, which you'll hear more about later this summer. It's going to be called CM Connect Global. But I've been invited by a partner ministry to develop training for, I think they work in 80 different countries. And so
wow.
I've been thinking outside of the box about, okay, so if this little nonprofit that I'm taking over, with very limited funding, if this is going to work, if we're going to serve the church on a global level, then what does that look like? How do we do that? And how can we leverage the experience of the community that we have to engage them, to serve them, to serve the global community, and to develop this training in these 80 different countries? Without it becoming product focused, because I have if you haven't picked this up from me already, like I have a love for resource producers and stuff, but I have an aversion to products, and I have an aversion to people who make the church into their profession, and I know that they mean well, and I know that they want to serve. And I know that they're trying to leverage their gifts, but when I say I have an aversion to it, what I mean by that isn't anything critical of them. It's just that the way I'm created, probably because I grew up blue collar, is that I feel like when someone talks about being a thought leader, they're trying to tell me what to do, and I don't want them to tell me what to do. I want to follow Jesus. I don't want to follow man. And I want to create a resource, and I want to create a community that helps us to identify what are the resources that are available. And there's no CM Connect resource. There's no us creating resources to sell. That's why you don't see a store at CM Connect. We don't sell curriculum. We don't sell any of that stuff, because I want to be able to tell you what I like and what I don't like about XYZ curriculum. And you don't have to wonder, well, is he endorsing this product because it's going to pay him, or is he endorsing it because that's what he really thinks? And
right.
That type of authenticity, I think that it's what our community is all about. It's very grassroots, and it's very it's very unique. And I think it's why people love CM Connect, and I think it's why I think it's why God allowed me to use it or to be a part of it. And anyways, I don't know if that really answers your question, Tom. What I'm trying to get at is just that, you know, what we're developing for the global church is a way of providing training that can go deep and wide and super fast and super far. And that's what CM Connect Global is going to be developing over the coming year.
Yeah. Well, that's what I appreciate about you, Michael. And I appreciate, I mean, like I said, I just remember back CPC Nashville when you got up on the stage and announced CM Connect and how I ran back to my room and joined.
I remember you telling
and
me that.
Said,
that was my first time.
Yeah, because it was. I was so excited because I wanted to be a part of a group that connected people and did it without strings attached. And so I'm really excited to see what's coming this summer. And I'm sure we'll get you back on the show and talk more about CM Connect Global when it comes around and how people can get involved and support and dive in on this with you. Because I think it's really exciting. There's no doubt about it. We need places like CM Connect that we can go that we're not getting bombarded with all the, like I said, all the resource stuff. I mean, I'm a resource junkie, so I do like I like all the bells and whistles, and that's my personality. I'm you know, a little squirrel here, squirrel there, and what's shiny and new, I like to play with. But I also need a place like this where I can come and not have to worry about all that. And so I think that's really exciting. The more I'm hearing from you, the more intrigued I'm becoming. So,
guarantee you, like there's no reality where CM Connect ever becomes a publishing company, and that is by design, and it's because of what our community has communicated back to me. They've said, hey, this is what we value about it. We like the fact that that we don't have to. There's no big brother watching over people's shoulder when they log on to CM Connect to see, you know, what kind of conversations are people having? Okay, well then we need to create a product that goes along with that. Like that doesn't happen in our community. And yeah. I can protect that. And it's a huge part of my calling, and I consider it an honor to be a part of it. But anyways.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks for sharing. And obviously, you can, those of you listening, you can always catch Michael around CM Connect and Tuesday chats. And of course, you know, obviously, you know, through all the avenues of Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of thing. So I encourage you to ask more questions and to lean into this. And so thanks again for listening to another episode of the CMC Radio Show here on CM Connect. And thank you, Michael, for allowing me and Ron to do this. We always have a blast doing this. And while Ron's on a little sabbatical here, thanks for flying with me on it tonight. At least I didn't mute you. Ron will be proud. thanks to those that listened in the chat room live tonight. Thank you if you're downloading this and listening to it later. I hope you're encouraged. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to interact on our CM Connect group or the Facebook group, whichever group you want to connect with there. You can catch me online on Twitter at ptbump.com or, I'll be around there. So, as always, we hope that you've been encouraged, equipped, and entertained a bit during this episode. And remember that Proverbs 27:17 reminds us that as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. So God bless you as you minister for the kingdom. And especially as you get into the summertime, God bless each one of you as you minister to the boys and girls and reach out. And we'll look forward to keeping back with our first and third Thursdays of the month to have another episode of KMC. So God bless everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, thanks.
See you soon, man.
Yep, see you, man.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I guess maybe it is. It is letting me stay on. Are you there?
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm here, so.
Huh, I thought it would disconnect me, but it didn't. That's weird. I thought it would cut us off if the recording time ended, but it didn't. Okay. Oh, it just cut you off.